Credit Suisse shares rally after it borrows big to boost liquidity. Plus, Treasury Secretary Yellen prepares to defend the handling of the U.S. banking crisis.
They are hopeful that they have put this fear of contagion to rest, at least for the time being.
And the U.S. threatens a TikTok ban. It's Thursday, March 16th. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal, and here's the AM edition of What's News. The top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Troubled lender Credit Suisse is getting a reprieve today after the bank overnight promised an overhaul of its operations alongside plans to borrow more than $50 billion in order to address liquidity concerns. The Swiss lender's shares had tumbled yesterday as fears about the health of global banks crossed the Atlantic. And while the firm has sought to describe its moves as preemptive and aimed at delivering value to its clients, it's not yet clear whether all investors necessarily share that view. Journal reporter Elliot Brown joins us now with an update on the very latest at Credit Suisse. Elliot, let's get right to it. Tell us about the latest moves that Credit Suisse has made here to address liquidity concerns and how the bank is characterizing these moves.
Basically, this problem child Bank of Europe has raised a huge amount of money from the Swiss central bank in an attempt to give investors confidence that, hey, we've got a lot of money. There is not a liquidity crisis here. And they're also buying back some of their bonds that had been trading at super low levels. Again, a step to sort of show, no, like we're going to be here. We're around for a while.
And Elliot, what have Swiss regulators said about the situation at the bank?
They came out with a statement saying that they don't see contagion with what's going on the other side of the Atlantic. And, you know, they're the ones helping oversee this deal. So the regulatory side, they say everything's cool here, too. But, you know, this is a fast moving market.
And Elliot, is it correct that Credit Suisse is sort of reliant on the Swiss National Bank at this point, given that, as we heard yesterday, it seems their other creditors don't seem to be willing to cut the firm any additional slack and provide it more funding?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that set off the sell-off yesterday was one of their largest shareholders essentially saying, we aren't going to put more money into this company. We have plenty in it already. And so you instead have a government institution saying, we've got a lot of money here. This bank is around. But obviously, that's very different from the private market saying that.
Yeah, Elliot, and not an insignificant player in the private market, as we're talking here about Credit Suisse's biggest shareholder, the Saudi National Bank. And it seems that really touched a nerve with investors who had been concerned about the bank's ability to make money and tap its shareholders again for funds. I mean, at least this morning, it seems those concerns may be somewhat assuaged, given that Credit Suisse's shares are getting a real boost. But I wonder, should we be expecting further volatility in the bank's shares?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. These things can move around a lot. Its bonds in general have been trading at distress level, showing that the market really did, as of yesterday, think that there is a default risk. And these things are very fluid, as we've seen. I mean, these crises are not very predictable in terms of how the market's going to react.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Elliot Brown. Elliot, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Now, the Swiss National Bank may be arguing that there is no contagion from the U.S. banking crisis to what is going on at Credit Suisse, but the sharp drop in its share price yesterday is raising some concerns at the European Central Bank. We've learned that ECB officials yesterday called banks that it supervises to ask about their exposure to Credit Suisse. And banking sector concerns are also complicating the policy calculus within the ECB as it prepares to announce its latest interest rate decision today. Tom Fairless is our ECB reporter in Frankfurt.
So when the ECB and other central banks raise interest rates, that reduces the price of assets that banks hold, especially sovereign debt and other debt. Because as interest rates and yields rise, then the prices of those assets fall. So the banks may not have expected this, and many are now sitting on what would be large losses if they valued their assets correctly. And that's only a problem if they have to sell those assets. You saw in the US how when a couple of regional banks came under stress, their deposits started to flow out, and they suddenly had to sell assets to fund that at a loss. And that's what caused the problems.
And given how rate moves can affect bank holdings, Fairless says that analysts are now split on whether the ECB will raise rates by a quarter or a half a percentage point, a shift from the half point expectation until just days ago.
The disturbance in financial markets will make the ECB more cautious. And rather than signaling clear plans to increase interest rates sharply, which they did until now, they'd likely say they'll take a meeting by meeting approach, focus on the data. So the bottom line is that the ECB probably is closer to the peak interest rate than investors had thought even a week ago.
The ECB's rate hike decision is expected at 9:15 a.m. Eastern. And coming up, we'll head back to Washington, where Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is preparing to defend the handling of the U.S. banking crisis. That and more after the break.
High inflation has impacted many of us. But what happens when prices go up 55, 67, or even 276%? It makes living more costly. It eats into your paycheck.
At the end of the day, the salary itself, it's not enough.
And money quickly loses value.
You can't save, you can't do anything.
Check out our complete series on extreme world inflation from A to Z, from What's News, plus other exclusive content on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is set to face tough questions from members of the U.S. Senate later this morning. She is supposed to be testifying about President Biden's 2024 budget, but with stocks sliding and clouds swirling over the U.S. banking sector, the hearing is likely to focus on whether and how the federal government should be stepping in to support banks and reassure investors. Wall Street Journal reporter Andy Duren covers the Treasury Department for us out of Washington, and he's here now with a look at what we can expect to hear from Secretary Yellen in just a few hours. Andy, this is kind of exceptional, is it not? We don't typically preview congressional testimony on the show, but this is notable to be hearing from the secretary when the economy is truly the top headline.
It is an exceptional moment. This is a huge week in a huge moment in the kind of the future of the U.S. financial system and the banking system and the economy overall. And Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen just so happened to be scheduled to appear before lawmakers today to discuss the White House budget, which was released last week, which if you've been following some of the financial news lately, feels like a lifetime ago. And yeah, she'll be there to take questions from lawmakers. And so some of them may, in fact, ask her about the budget. But the expectation is that much of the testimony today will focus on the response that she and other federal regulators orchestrated over the weekend to the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank, and whether those steps have been enough to stabilize the U.S. and global financial system.
All right. So this hearing could probably go in any number of directions, depending on the questions that Secretary Yellen ends up fielding. But with so many investors hanging on her prepared remarks, I'd imagine, what is the message that we're expecting her to deliver?
So I think Secretary Yellen's message will be at least twofold. On the one hand, she'll say that the banking system is resilient, that the U.S. banking system, despite some of the turbulence over the weekend and this week, that Americans can trust the banking system and that there is no need for concern in terms of the, you know, safety of Americans' deposits and things like that. The other message I think that she'll probably bring to lawmakers is that the interventions that the Biden administration and that regulators took over the weekend were justified and necessary to make sure that the banking system remains safe and strong and resilient.
The argument that the banking system is resilient right now, what is the basis of the administration's argument to support that, given the volatility we've been seeing in just the last few days?
You know, in my conversations with folks around Washington at the Treasury Department and the White House, I think what everyone's been paying closest attention to this week has been deposits and whether people at and corporations at other mid-sized banks like Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank are pulling out deposits like we saw they were last week at those two banks. And what we expect Secretary Yellen to say today is that the intervention that they staged over the weekend has, at least so far, successfully prevented such a contagion in terms of depositor flight, that again, that you may see gyrations and volatility in equity markets. And of course, you know, Treasury officials are watching all of that closely, particularly the situation with Credit Suisse. But, you know, right now that they are hopeful that they have put this fear of contagion to rest, at least for the time being.
Andy, the administration has said they are not bailing out any banks, and yet they have been accused by their critics of having done so. Is this just a messaging issue for Secretary Yellen and others to deal with, or could she actually see her actions constrained if discontent over the approach that she and others have been taking grows?
So yeah, I think that's a really good question. I think we should definitely expect her to face criticism and questions along those lines about whether these moves could be considered or should be considered a quote-unquote bailout. I think the way that Biden administration officials, the president, Secretary Yellen, and others have talked about this question, or the distinction they've drawn, is that this was a measure that was aimed at protecting depositors. You know, equity holders and the management in Silicon Valley Bank were not protected. They lost their jobs and were wiped out in a lot of instances. And also that the interventions that they staged do not involve direct, at least at this point, direct taxpayer support. And so those have really been the key points that they've tried to, you know, underline as they've made this argument that it couldn't be considered a bailout. But, you know, the federal government is taking this unusual, extraordinary step to ensure uninsured deposits that are not usually subject to federal protection. And so in that sense, they are taking a step that, you know, some could say is a bailout.
And finally, Andy, given that this is congressional testimony, after all, are we expecting Secretary Yellen to weigh in on whether Congress ought to be more involved in passing more regulations on banks, for instance?
President Biden has called for Congress to reconsider the deregulatory steps they took under the Trump administration that affected the amount of scrutiny that mid-sized banks are subject to. I think we can certainly expect Secretary Yellen to support the president's call for that type of reform. I think it's important to note that this type of action, this type of law, if it were to pass, would be rolling back a rollback of measures of Dodd-Frank. And so I think we can certainly expect her to lend her support to that, and also possibly to lend her support to the Fed and other regulators taking other steps short of that to increase scrutiny of mid-sized banks and to overall maybe pay closer attention to things like depositor concentration, which was a factor in the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, that they were, many of their depositors were in the same interest rate sensitive fields and technology across the country and in Silicon Valley, obviously. But in general, I mean, Secretary Yellen, when she was at the Fed, she's long been someone who's kind of pushed for stronger financial regulation in the wake of the global financial crisis.
Wall Street Journal reporter Andy Duren covers the Treasury Department for us out of Washington, D.C. Andy, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
In other news today, we are exclusively reporting that the Biden administration is demanding that ByteDance, the Chinese owners of TikTok, sell their shares in the app or face a possible U.S. ban. According to people familiar with the matter, CFIUS, the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S., made the sale demand recently. TikTok has said that a forced sale wouldn't address the perceived security risk, and the company has pledged to spend $1.5 billion on a program to safeguard U.S. user data and content from Chinese influence. The Treasury Department, which leads CFIUS, declined to comment. Maternal mortality in the United States has risen to its highest level since 1965. According to new data from the National Center for Health Statistics, the number of women who died during pregnancy or shortly after rose 40% in 2021 compared to the prior year. Research shows that cardiovascular conditions, including uncontrolled bleeding, are the leading cause of pregnancy-related deaths in the United States, but that COVID-19 made matters worse. Pregnant women are at a higher risk of dying from COVID-19, and people were less likely to get necessary care during the pandemic because of lockdowns and a fear of catching the disease. The United States is now the most dangerous place to give birth among high-income countries. South Korea and Japan have taken a major step toward improving relations. South Korea's president arrived in Tokyo today for the first formal summit between leaders of the two countries since 2011. And our Tokyo bureau chief, Peter Landers, says that the meeting has already yielded one major announcement after Japan agreed to lift export controls on South Korea, covering materials that are needed to make semiconductors.
It's a concrete step by Japan that they had been reluctant to take for nearly 4 years, and effectively admitting that the initial export control step was really punishment and retaliation against South Korea for what Japan considered unfriendly actions by Seoul. Definitely, there are still a lot of outstanding issues between the two countries, but the significance of the warming of ties, especially for the U.S., is that the countries can work more closely together on challenges such as China's militarization and North Korean missile launches. All of these are areas where the three countries share interests, but they haven't been able to work together as well as the U.S. would like because of Japan-South Korea animosity.
And investor fears surrounding the banking crisis have exacerbated a flight to safety, pushing precious metals higher and sending oil prices down. Crude prices have now tumbled to a 15-month low as investors unload risky assets, with U.S. crude futures slipping below $70 a barrel yesterday. That price slump comes as we report that the G7 have opposed an EU proposal to lower the price cap on Russian crude below $60 a barrel. Some European countries had hoped to tighten the Western sanctions on Russia this month, but according to people familiar with the matter, President Biden has said that there is no appetite for doing so in Washington. A spokeswoman for the U.S. National Security Council declined to comment. And that's What's News for Thursday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.